Sergei Prokofiev's second violin concerto from 1935, Gil Shaham, performing with the London Symphony and Andrei Previn. I'm John Zeck.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn at Henry Ford Community College. And happy holidays to you from your friends at Adre Appliance TV, Photo, and Sound on Carlisle in Dearborn. You know, Adre has been sponsoring this classical programming for a very long time now, and we truly appreciate their support. In fact, we couldn't bring it your way without them. So when you call Adre at 313-274-9500, tell them thank you for presenting this music to you. Speaking of music, it's the 2007-2008 season of the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. Next performance, Friday, February 1st, pianist and conductor Rich Ridenour, back by popular demand for their annual Pops concert. If you'd like more details, check out the Dearborn Symphony website. It's dearbornsymphony.org or call 313-565-2424. And happy listening from the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra.
A few years back, the Times of London called him the best trumpeter on earth. And coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll have a chance to hear whether he lives up to the hype. Well, good morning. I'm Jeff Esworthy. Glad you could join me today. That so-called best trumpeter on earth hails from Sweden. His name is Håkan Hardenberger. We'll have a chance to hear him along with the London Philharmonic Orchestra. This trumpet concerto by Johan Melchior Molter is coming up in 25 minutes.
Good morning. This is WHFR Dearborn, and we're live today for the last edition of the new WHFR Journal at this time period. Just announcing that up front. Next week, we're going to begin our show at 1 p.m. on Fridays and go to 2 p.m. Yes, local news and views. You found us right here on WHFR Dearborn. Good morning. This is the new WHFR Journal on WHFR-FM, the station making waves. I'm your host, Jay Kornick, and with us today is our very, very special guest, someone that I talk about almost every week, and now he has a chance to talk for himself and dispel all those mistakes that I made about his positions on things, the publisher emeritus of the Dearborn Times-Herald newspaper, Frank Bewick. And good morning, Frank. How are you? Well, we're in much...
Call you Jay?
There we are. Yes, you may call me Jay. Absolutely, if I can call you Frank.
Well, my mother does.
Okay, there we go. And first question that everybody has to have answered right up front, what does a publisher emeritus do?
Well, as little as possible.
That's a spirit.
Very, very little. It's kind of a... Well, I don't know how to describe it. It's a royalty position, kind of. You take all the credit and get none of the blame. You just oversee the operation, make sure it's running the way you want it to run.
Well, of course, you have a fine publisher and editorial manager in your two sons, actually doing the daily hard work, right?
I have two sons and a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest son, Mike, is... he's kind of the publisher. The younger son is Scott. He's the editor and the assistant publisher. Mm-hmm. And the daughter is the assistant publisher.
Okay. And the daughter's name is?
Laura.
Right.
Laurie.
I just met Laurie, in fact. Yes.
I dare not call her Laura. She that turns her off.
Well, that's a very family affair. It's not many newspapers in the U.S. that still have that situation, not just family ownership, but the family's actually running the place, too.
My wife is still there, too.
Okay, there we go. And her name is?
She's Anne.
Anne, very good. Tell us a little about the history of the Dearborn Times-Herald newspaper and your involvement with it.
Well, it started in November of 1963. At that time, I was working for the Dearborn Guide. There were two papers at one time, Dearborn Press and the Dearborn Guide. Actually, it goes beyond. There were three papers at one point, the Independent, the Press, and the Guide. And the Press and Independent were owned by the same person who merged them. I worked for them. And then the guy at the Guide, Bill Ross, apparently liked me so much, he offered me a better job, so I went there. And I met some advertisers, some businessmen who didn't like the way things were going, so they talked me into starting this paper. And they became my sponsors. Ted Traskus from Ace Budget Center, which is now ACO. And Mike Adrey was one.
Okay. Traskos and Adrey, right.
And Frank Greska, who owned Family Pantry Supermarket on Telegraph, but he only lasted 1 week. Mike Adrey lasted about 3 months. Ted Traskus, at the end of 2 years, gave me the whole shot. He was tired of it. And that's the way it's been ever since. I've had it since on my own since 1965.
Why does a town the size of Dearborn need two papers or even three, since we had three at one point?
Well, it's for one, we all have different opinions. We all
yes.
We have very different opinions, and we have different readers. Some people like our opinions, and others like theirs.
I've said this many times on this show, because the basis of this show is in fact, the springboards, if you will, from each week are the two papers in Dearborn, the Dearborn Times-Herald and the Press and Guide. And the reason that I refer to both of them, sometimes more 1 week, sometimes another, is that it's not the same news that they choose, first of all. And then there's always, of course, the editorial angles and if you will, the points of view of the papers in the selection of the stories, that's one thing, but the editorial angle, if you will, on the other, that's the other important side, and they're not the same. Even if the stories cover the same issue, as I tell people, you get different information, different details that are sometimes quite amazingly different.
Well, this is...
And it's not a matter of accuracy, although sometimes, but it's a matter of what they think is important.
Well, this is... Your stories are written by people, and people have opinions, and all of their opinions are reflected in their writing. They're not supposed to be. They're not supposed to give opinions in their writing, but you can't. It's almost impossible to avoid it.
Because there are two papers, and of course you're trying to run a business. You have to make profits. You have to attract readers, of course. But are you somewhat consciously aware up front to look for either the scoop that the other paper doesn't have or different angles?
Well, we don't try to scoop them because we're both out on the same day. We don't know what stories they're going to have, nor do they know what stories
we're
going to have.
That's true. Yeah.
So we don't scoop one another.
You find out later if you scoop.
Yeah, yes. we judge what we believe to be the best story and go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we try to get the human interest side rather than the political side of life. Mm-hmm. This is just a recent turnabout of ours. Politics got their name in the paper all the time. Individuals mm-hmm. do not.
Exactly. What would you say, though, is your assumption or your perspective of the differences between the two papers on a more continuing base? I mean, just generalizing wildly, right now, what would you say the different approaches or coverage or points of view are?
It'd be hard to put into words. I'm not sure I could explain it. They have I can't explain it.
Okay. I think it probably varies from issue to issue and week to week.
It does.
I remember, and I've done this show since WHFR went on the air 22 years ago, actually coming on our 23rd birthday.
You don't look that old.
Yeah, well, thank you. But sometimes my voice seems to show how many words I've spoken. And some people say this room, Studio A, is overheated because I talk too much. You know, it's my own hot air that warms the place. But the history that I remember, and I've only been a Dearborn resident since 79, so, you know, I'm a newbie sort of for some people in Dearborn. Have you lived in Dearborn all your life?
No. I lived in Dearborn for 3 years back in 1950 and 51, 52.
Okay, excuse me. Sure.
I moved to Detroit, myself and my two kids.
Mm-hmm.
We bought a home in Riverview where I began my newspaper career.
Oh, okay. I lived there briefly myself.
It's, in 1955, we started a small community paper called the Riverview Review.
Oh, I see.
Now, I'd like to hear you say that five times quickly.
Yeah, right.
But
I won't try.
I did a column called Riverviewing, and people seemed to like it, so and I continue on here. I do my column now.
Mm-hmm. And his column is entitled, folks, 30 plus 1.
Right.
We're with Frank Bewick, publisher emeritus of the Dearborn Times-Herald today. My assessment, my own generalization, which is probably not true anymore, is that the Dearborn Times-Herald was more on the outs with the Dearborn elected, certainly the mayor and their administration, than on the ins. That the Press and Guide was more the city's favored paper for interviews and things like that. Especially when, let's say, during the period that Tom J. Edwards was your editor, it seemed like you were getting the cold shoulder from the administration because of some of the stories you did.
That happened quite frequently over the years.
Mm-hmm.
We take a different slant. We want to tell the people what we think is going on rather than what the city hall wants us to tell them to think.
Well, I thought, and of course I am a full-time telecommunication professor here at the college, and we talk about media issues and history of newspapers and the other media. I thought that was one of the essential elements of journalism, although it's not practiced that way too much today, except the Times-Herald does it, and sometimes the Press and Guide now, too. I don't want to slight them. They're under, a new publisher, Denise McDonald, and, she's been there for several years now, but I'm just saying is that they seem to have a slightly different approach, and sometimes they have done what I call investigative journalism, that is, articles that look in detail at things and ask questions about, is this right? Is this fair? Is this even legal of the schools and the administration? The whole history of journalism, I know you're familiar with this, is that it was thought of by many of the founders of our country as the fourth estate. Three branches of government, but the independent newspapers have to be involved in the balance of power and to keep our democracy alive. So I'm always happy to see, first of all, the variety of editorial opinions, and certainly yours, Frank, at the Press and Guide each week, which is there regularly in both papers. You have two papers, of course, I should mention, the Sunday Times and also the Wednesday edition.
Yeah, we have a third paper, too.
Yeah, and you do, which is...
Your community... Excuse me.
Oh, yes.
Your Community Voice.
Uh-huh.
It's a paper geared toward the Arabic population. Mm-hmm. And it's going over very nicely, but it's only once a month.
Once a month, right, yes. And that's included with someone who subscribes.
No, it's completely different. It's a free paper that we give out in various locations.
Because I have seen it, maybe because I get a comp here at the college, but I've seen that, and that's a worthy adjunct to
the picture, too. Well, I'm sure they're available at the college here.
Yes.
But
right.
you're talking about the government and stuff in the newspapers. Reminds me of a quotation by Thomas Jefferson. I can't give you this exactly, but something mm-hmm. to the effect of, were I to choose between government without newspapers or newspapers without government, I would not hesitate a moment to choose the latter.
Exactly, exactly.
Government has a set way of, they're not all bad, but they have a set way of operating, and I don't always think it's in the best interest of the community, of the people.
Well, a lot of people get, most people get most of their news from the cable news channels, okay, like Fox News or MSNBC, CNN. Why do they need a newspaper? Now, I know the answer to this, but I don't think, and maybe our listeners, you know, they say, well, I get all the news from the new WHFR Journal. Why do they need to read their local papers?
Well, number one, it depends on what station you're talking about. If you're talking about the three major stations, ABC, NBC, and CBS, they don't give you news. They read headlines.
That's exactly right.
And they read headlines, if you notice, out of newspapers.
Yes.
They'll get the Morning Free Press, and they'll read it. And they'll read you the headlines, and they'll give you 5 or 10 words about the story, and that's it. Newspaper will give you a number of paragraphs.
And the additional information is good to read and know why?
Well, if in the case of the most recent, one family tried to burn up the baby in a damn barbecue.
Yeah.
Okay, but they can only give you a headline and they show you a picture of the barbecue. Whoopee.
Well, it's sensational. It may be exciting to some people, but that's perverse. It's actually quite perverse
but
to get any
get
sort
into,
of excitement. You've got to
get into it as why they did this.
Yes.
News, they can't do that with the 30-second time frame.
As I know from teaching journalism anyway, the why and the how, that's the learning experience for us as citizens, and we need that. Now, maybe not every story. Everybody has their own things they find more important. But, how for their own health and safety, how and why do these things happen? We need to know the details. But also, as somebody said sometime, God is in the details, that the real truth of the matter can only be assessed by you as an individual, in your own head, sorted out, if you've got a lot of the details yourself. And that's what newspapers give us. Most people don't realize, you mentioned headline news, how few words are in each story on TV. Okay, you get some pictures, but even though they say pictures are worth 1,000 words, which 1,000 words,
well,
you know?
What pictures, too. They'll take you to a shooting, they'll send a reporter 60 miles out to where there was a shooting, and the pictures are, they'll show you bullet casings in the street. Now, I don't know what value that picture has, but that's all. You know, they can't show you the shooting. Mm-hmm. They can't show you the arrested person because he hasn't been charged. They can't show you any of these things. We can do this because, number one, we're not out instantly. We're out a week later or a couple of days later. We have more time to research our stories.
Of course. They've got
instants.
Exactly.
And they've got out of a half an hour, they've got to give you 5 minutes of news, 5 minutes of weather, mm-hmm. 12 minutes of commercials. How much time is left?
And the good journalist just doesn't go with the press release or the authoritative source like Just the Mayor. The good newspaper would also look and ask the opinions of other people involved in the story, too, to try to get the whole picture. You can't just have one point of view. Now, it takes more time, and, you know, there's only so much time going. You have only enough money to pay so many reporters for their stories, of course. But that's the folks, if we didn't make a great argument for local papers, and in fact, reading not just one, but both papers. And in fact, I suggest subscribing, in fact, because that's really good up front. They know they've got solid income there.
Well, but please do.
Yeah, exactly. And there's always special deals. I know there was some discount shopping cart or something for a while that you were offering with the Times Herald subscription here.
Oh, we always have deals going.
Always.
Yes. I mean, we're like a department store. We're like Art Van. You get 50% off on everything you buy every day.
And especially for several years in a row subscribed, I bet. Yes. Well, I know a valuable service, and I do want to thank you, too, for besides the stories and the good research and the good writing that the Times Herald continues, and again, often either different from or different details from the Press and Guide, which is doing, I think, a very good job these days too. But they're not the same, folks. But then there's the editorial opinions. Now, besides yours, you look for a few other opinions too that you run somewhat regularly.
We subscribe to a service that gives us the opportunity to examine editorial opinions from maybe 50, 75 different newspapers. Mm-hmm. And we'll look through them and pick out the one that we think is best for the moment.
Right,
and
right.
And we'll get them from the Battle Creek paper, from the Wall Street Journal, from any of a number of places.
Yeah, I've noticed that often, and this is, well, it's more true, I think, of your paper than the Press and Guide. Sometimes the Press and Guide has no, like, editorial, that is, that unsigned thing, and I always wonder who writes those, whether it's a publisher or what, but they're unsigned, and they're on the page, and they are the newspaper's editorial for that week, but often the Times Herald goes with an editorial from another paper.
Yes, we will credit the other paper.
Frequently, it's another Michigan paper, though.
Yes,
interestingly.
Usually is,
because Michigan issues, perhaps, or
Lansing Journal, or the Jackson Citizen Patriot, any of a number of papers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if someone else has a good idea and it affects, you know, Michigan and the current issues, I think that's great.
It's a lot easier for us.
Yeah. Instant filler. You do have, a little criticism here, and I've always made it. There is a think tank in Michigan, and it's known as a conservative think tank, it's in Midland, Michigan. Mm-hmm. You know which one it is. But I always make the point, I always point out that it's a think tank, but they're hire the people to think in a conservative direction, if you want to use that term, conservative fiscally and so on.
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah.
With
and they have research things, and they go into great detail about their point of view, but I think people should know up front that they are thinking towards a certain to support a certain theory of economics, and it's not that they're totally open at the outset in their research.
Generally, they support the Republican point of view,
right?
Which sometimes I agree with, sometimes I don't.
Yeah. How would you, as long as you brought that up, how would you describe yourself politically? And you don't have to state it if you don't want to, because I think it's everyone's right not to state.
Oh, I'm not ashamed of it.
Their left-right association.
I was born and raised in a Democratic family. My dad was a union representative. That's all I knew was Democrats until George Romney, really. Mm. George Romney convinced me that I should be a Republican. So then I tried that, and there's a story that I don't want to get into, but now I'm neither. Now I'm an independent. I vote for the man. I've never voted a straight ticket in all the time I've voted, and I've voted a number of years now.
And of course, it's an interesting issue that they're really, in this day of all the presidential pre-primary debates among the Democrats and Republicans, that sort of gives a false picture of the full range of political views in this country on the actual ballots, the presidential ballots every 4 years and sometimes even every 2 years. There's also other parties, too, and other candidates running, sometimes without a party, even a total independent, sometimes, almost always there is a libertarian candidate, either nationally or statewide too, and Green Party is very active also. And it's just, I think it's unfortunate that even papers like the New York Times, which are nationally focused most of the time in most of the paper, they give no attention to the other political views. The libertarians would see themselves, as agreeing with the so-called liberals or the Democrats on many issues. But also, they are usually typed as extremely conservative on many other issues. Ron Paul, the Republican presidential candidate right now, is the closest to...
He's the closest to the... To that
the libertarian points of view. Yeah. For example, he is totally against the war in Iraq and wants our troops out now, which is identified as a Democratic issue, but extremely fiscally and socially conservative on the other hand. So, and even the Green Party, although they're usually perceived as liberal progressive on many issues, you know, their overall goal is something that few people could disagree with. Clean air, clean water, you know, saving on energy, that's almost even nonpartisan. But, of course, how you get those improvements, that's the where it comes in, whether it's a, you know, a government, a federal issue, or whether it's a local initiative thing.
I'm waiting for the day that one person or one party will put together the finer points of all of these parties and put it into one. Because the Libertarians have some very good points to them. Mm-hmm. The Green Party has some very good points to them.
Well, I've said on this show, and maybe it's the spirit of being an independent, and I think I am too, although I have actual party memberships, you know, card-carrying member of several parties, because I like to keep informed of what's going on the inside, is that I think each issue is much more complicated than even any of these presidential candidates are letting us think. Of course, they only usually have a soundbite of 30 seconds to a minute to express themselves, but that each issue might need solutions from the left and right. I happen to feel now that there's no clear theoretical answer that's right for every situation that's clearly either left or right or center. I wish there were simple answers for everything, but I think every issue has to be decided as necessary. Sometimes I really think we need the federal government involved in many things, and other times totally not the federal government or even maybe the state or local governments.
Well, as far as these debates go, I don't think they're that good, simply because the stations that give them are prejudiced, and they select the questions to be asked.
Yeah,
they screen the questions and they ask the questions along the lines of what they want to hear, or what they want to embarrass their candidate to say or something. And I think they'll let the candidates ask their own questions of each other.
Were you physically in the Dearborn Center when the Republican presidential debate happened here back in October?
No, I was not.
Well, of course, they corral all the reporters. I was there representing WHFR, and we couldn't even ask questions, much less see the candidates directly, unless we happened to be at the right time when they walked in from the back door or something.
Well, they put most of the media up at U of M.
Right, yeah. I was in the so-called media room there, but all we got to do was see the debate on the big screen.
Yeah.
And we had audio and video connections and computer connections so we could send the stories in. But we didn't have any fresher angle than somebody watching on TV at home.
Well, when this was first announced, by the way, we ought to credit our mayor, Jack O'Reilly, with getting this here.
Oh, yes.
Because he worked his buns off to get these people here.
And there's many reasons that that was good. And of course, we expected there'd be more questions asked about Michigan.
But
specifically, but there weren't.
But the surprising thing is that Jack O'Reilly is a Democrat.
Is he? Well, I didn't even know.
You would think that he would have gone after the Democrats rather than the Republicans.
Well, yeah. But actually, the Republicans have stayed in our hotels frequently. You know, they come to the St. Regis and the Hyatt Regency. If they come to Detroit, they seem to stay in Dearborn for whatever reasons rather than downtown hotels. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I don't know exactly why, unless they perceive that their supporters are suburban. Primarily. I actually went out and interviewed, as I think a couple of papers did, some of the citizen groups that were campaigning, like on Michigan Avenue and around the center. I think that was the interesting story. These are local Michigan people, and all these other reporters coming from all over the country, they just went into that one big room, didn't even talk to any of the real people, the real supporters, and try to get some in-depth understanding of what was going on there. That's too bad, but, you know.
Well, if they're from Washington, they're not going to be interested in what the people in Dearborn think.
No.
But I tried to, contact these people and get them on. I run a TV show for my Kiwanis Club.
I was going to ask you about that. Kiwani Talk, is that still the title?
Yes, it is.
And it's on, is it on Comcast or and
it's
and
on
WOW?
Comcast.
It's only on Comcast, yes. Access Channel.
Okay. Anyhow, I tried to get them on these candidates or as many as I could on TV, but I couldn't even make contact. Nobody knew how to contact them.
Right.
And I went to the highest people I could think of in the Republican Party, and they, nothing.
Right. No, they're just in and out, and, you know, the issue for that debate was pre-decided since it was a Republican debate anyway, and that was the first time that Fred Thompson was going to be included in the debate. So what would he say in, oh, Fred Thompson's debut, big deal. I mean, what about those Michigan questions? Interesting that Thompson and others that, oh, there's no economic crisis in this country. Oh, well maybe in Michigan here, but, well, it's just Michigan. Thanks a lot. You're in Michigan. Could you say something supportive of us, you know? But, oh, I know the debate goes out over the whole country, so if you're doing fine economically somewhere else in the country, I guess you don't want to hear about Michigan.
Well, that's you've brought up a point that I question myself. Now, they say the economics are fantastic every place except Michigan. Yet we have foreclosures in every state, and Michigan is not leading the nation with that. Mm-hmm.
Which you covered in an editorial just this last week.
Mm-hmm. If it's so fantastic, why are there this many foreclosures?
Yeah.
Somebody's not telling us something.
And I don't know that unemployment is really that great. Okay, Michigan's the worst, I think, and we have the worst unemployment rate, the highest unemployment rate in the country, but if I understand correctly. But still, you know, we have the stock market has its ups and downs, but mostly down. Our money is worth less internationally. And so I do think that there's major economic problems in this country. Our health care system, of course, the costs are skyrocketing up all the time. And I often think that, there's... perception is worth more than statistics in many cases, and the politicians know if they tell a good story, people are going to believe the story more than the numbers. Although I was just reading something in the New York Times today about Rudolph Giuliani, how often he gets the facts wrong and the statistics wrong in his reading. It's halfway through, and Frank wants to take another slip of coffee here, I know. So I'm going to play some public service announcements, and we'll be right back with our special interview here on the new WHFR Journal on the station Making Waves with publisher Emeritus, the Dearborn Times Herald, and that is Frank B. Wick. So we'll be right back.
This is the sound of a bully at school.
Where'd you get the shirt? Colorblind and things?
And this is the sound of a kid telling her parents about the bully. If you don't hear about it from your kid, that doesn't mean it's not happening.
McGruff the Crime Dog here about how parents can tell if bullying is upsetting their children. Kids may avoid school. Grades may suffer. Stop bullies with words to your kids, school officials, or other concerned parents, and at McGruff.org.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
The Henry Ford Community College Theater Arts Department presents the stage version of the famous novel and film To Kill a Mockingbird this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 8 p.m., November 23rd, 24th, 30th, and December 1st. Also on Sundays at 2 p.m., November 25th and December 2nd, 2007. To Kill a Mockingbird is a famous novel about the struggle for racial and social justice. For more information or reservations, call 313-845-9772. Enjoy the play.
We're back in the WHFR studios live with our guest this morning, publisher emeritus of the Dearborn Times-Herald newspaper, Frank Bewick. And again, we really thank you for coming in today, Frank, and letting us know your direct opinions on things, although we know what you put in the papers this week if we were reading the papers. But you're here in person. So let me get you to talk about specifically some issues that you might be in favor of, but just a couple that I put down. Mayor O'Reilly, he did reveal that he is actually a Democrat, but how do you think he's doing as mayor? You think he's on the right track and holding down the fort that Mayor Guido set up?
I think he's doing a great job, and I like the direction he's taking because he's making the city employees be more user-friendly, that's a good term.
Yeah, wow.
There have been a lot of discussions about various departments who treat the citizens like badly,
yeah.
And he's trying to change all that.
As if people coming in might be just causing trouble
right,
or something.
Right, right. They're
bothering them.
Well, you're interrupting my day.
Mm.
The building department is one there that's had bad reviews for years. And he's working on changing that and becoming more user-friendly.
The building and safety department, in fact, it's kind of interesting. Of course, I don't, not being a reporter that goes out and talks to people, investigates. Mayor Guido, in a couple of his State of the City addresses, although not the last one, indicated that, you know, reforming the building and safety department was one of his top priorities, and that was for like the second from last, third from last State of the City addresses. And I don't know if there were that many changes. There must be a lot of established resistance of some sort to whatever the changes are. Now, of course, being more friendly, you'd think that's just an attitude, and it wouldn't be hard to put that in place, but maybe it's a personnel thing, too.
Well, I have a personal experience with them because I sold a home about 5 or 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I had to have it inspected, of course, by the city. And they were in every detail, every minute detail. The garage was leaning a half an inch. I had to straighten the garage out. How do you straighten a garage out? It's been like that for how many years, 50 mm-hmm. years. How do you straighten it? You don't straighten it out. You just tell them to look at it as slant or something like that. But
well, I'm sorry to say, and of course it's just anecdotal, and therefore it's not necessarily the general case, but I know of two other people specifically that had been part of Dearborn government, and they were trying to sell the homes or home of a relative, and they were just put through such hell. Now, everybody wants to make sure that the homes are safe and, you know, certified safe to live in and safe to sell and all that. That's not an issue. But it almost seemed like they were out to get them somehow. You know, it was almost like a harassment. And they actually, one person actually retired because they could in Dearborn, really out of spite. I mean, they were helping the city, they thought, and doing a good job, and I know their record. I just won't mention their name right now. And they're gone, and they're gone out of the city and not doing that fine and very public job within the city because they felt the building and safety department harassed them. And, again, it's only one case, and it's just, you know, one out of two that I heard of. I'm a homeowner in Dearborn, and I did a big remodeling 10 years ago and didn't have any trouble, and, in fact, they inspected it too quickly. There was some problems they should have caught that I should have thrown back in the face of my contractor. But they were really nice and prompt and quick and so on. But selling a house and buying a house, that's maybe a different inspectors or something.
Well, this has been in contention with the Dearborn Board of Realtors for some time,
mm.
that the inspections are too strict and they require too much to be done before a home can be sold. There used to be a thing where the owner could buy it as is with the idea that they could fix it up later, and I believe that was changed there. No longer exists, but I could be wrong on that.
It could have something. I think we want our inspectors to feel that they have the freedom to make the calls that they need to, that there wouldn't be government interference, mayor's interference or whatever, to give special favors to somebody, for example.
Yeah.
But maybe, and I noticed in the paper, or one of the papers this week, that the mayor is looking into, they're considering early retirement incentives to get some people to leave. Of course, they They want to save costs by maybe trying to consolidate and not have as many people there. But maybe sometimes getting the older people who are set in their ways, maybe good or bad or not, getting them to move on or enjoy their retirement earlier, maybe that's a way to change the attitudes or the mood in that department. See, I don't even know, but I agree that it seems to be a sore spot in a lot of people's hearts in Dearborn.
Well, it could well be. That's the same philosophy that the auto companies are using, but the auto companies are hiring the newer people at a lower rate.
Oh, much lower.
So yeah, they're able to save some money there. Now, whether this is the case with the city or not, I don't know. But it would be nice to offer some of these people that have been around 20, 30 years an opportunity to retire early with a nice pension. And to hire some new people with new attitudes.
In the last election, it seemed like Mayor O'Reilly, at least in what he was endorsing, the passage of the Charter Commission rules and the approval of the option to explore and then maybe sell the Dearborn Towers, since he was open and visible in supporting those two, they did both pass. So that seems like a public endorsement of the mayor, although maybe the public decided.
Yeah, well,
on their own basis.
The mayor and I took different paths on this, on the Florida property.
Right.
Because, well, in my case, there was a section in the new charter that allowed them to raise the taxes.
Yes.
So if they were allowed to raise the taxes, there would be no need to sell the Florida property. If as long as the Florida property had a purpose. Now, there might be more to this. I've never seen the property, so I really don't know what it's like.
Right. Our news director here, a volunteer part-time person, Susan Morrell, she told me a couple of weeks ago when she was co-hosting that she's actually been down there, and coincidentally she has seen the Dearborn property, and it's not doing well, she said. It doesn't look real spiffy, and it probably does need a lot of major improvements.
I've heard
that.
I've heard those reports, too.
And, of course, the administration says, well, those might really add up, and, you know, that wouldn't make it a break-even situation, which apparently is now. The city's not losing any money on that right now.
No, they're not making any money nor losing.
Right.
I guess it is a break. But beauty is in the eye of the beholder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What is not right to one person might be great to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling, of course, we didn't have full participation in this last election. I mean, that would make it a pure democracy, wouldn't it, folks? But what was it? I think Dearborn Heights was rather low. Did we have 25% or 30%?
We had about 25% in Dearborn,
yeah,
which is low.
It's yes, well, low. Of course it is.
But that's average for school board elections.
Yeah, right, and off-year, so-called off-year elections, or elections that come at a somewhat different time. It is
what
is
do
a
we
problem.
Have here?
Yeah. It's just our next DJ is coming in, and our person at the front desk here, who's a student at the college, he had to go and write a paper this morning,
okay.
So I'm able to get her in. The folks, and coming up, yes, in just 20 minutes, LaBeth, our new DJ host of Big Band Music and More, which goes from 11 today until 2 o'clock. Although next week, yeah, you'll be starting with Big Band Music, because remember, the new WHFR Journal, we're moving to the afternoon, 1 to 2 o'clock. So hope you can catch us at that time. Or, of course, from our website, WHFR.FM, because we're podcast, folks. If you know what that is, you can go there and download the MP3 file anytime you want to. And, in fact, this boggles my mind, but they've saved our shows for the last 12 weeks. So in case you want to know what I was saying and Frank was saying 12 weeks from now, scary, isn't it, Frank? You can go to our website. So that comes up at 11, and LaBeth is here now and getting ready. The Dearborn schools, how are they handling themselves? Think they're going to survive John Artis leaving?
Oh, I believe so.
I
think they left the best candidate go, though. She left a few months ago to take a superintendent in some other job. Her name escapes me at the moment, but
yes, I heard that she was a fine candidate.
Yeah. She was considered at the same time that John Artis
was. I didn't know that. Yeah,
and they chose John instead of her.
And they kept her as associate superintendent.
Yes,
something
yes,
like
she
that.
Did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And. I guess she felt wasted. So
Yeah, I know it's important. Schools are such an important, essential, and important institution. We have to educate our young in the best possible way, and make them capable of, you know,
you're
going to
get me started on something here. You're going to turn the faucet on.
Well. Oh, I guess you could. I just have to say, and of course, all the opinions expressed during the show, folks, this is a disclaimer we have to say every hour, are not necessarily the opinions of Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, students, or administrators. But we'd like to think they are. You know, on this, I always find the superintendents that are chosen, especially in Dearborn, rather bland. Now, we want stability. We want good, solid, rational people, but I'd like to see some new ideas. I mean, I'm not in favor of change for its own sake, but I think we can always improve things, you know. And I especially was upset, I don't know about you, was it a middle school that had the bad smell, which they said was actually toxic, which they've kind of improved and it still apparently smells bad, but they're not going to tear it down. They didn't want to put all the millions into it. I thought that was a badly handled thing. I mean, I think people really wanted them to do something more there. But do you see any specific problems other than, I mean, that might be an old issue with the Dearborn schools that you think the after John Artis superintendent should deal with?
Well, I see a problem not only with the Dearborn schools, but with all schools, and that is discipline.
Mm.
Excuse me. Yeah. I think if we had more discipline, we'd have more people learning, more reasons to teach. I think it's a very, I don't know how to put this, but it's a strain on the teacher to be able to teach and not know that they're being taught, not know that the people are learning, mm-hmm. or knowing that the people are not learning, knowing the people are not paying attention, and they just, you know, they let them walk around half, the girls falling out of their clothes, the men have got their pants down around their knees, for God's sake, so they're, this is terrible. This was not allowed when I went to school, and I don't think our generation grew up too badly. And why they're allowing it now, I don't know. And as far as Dearborn is unique in that we have two different aspects in our education. We have the Arabic aspect, which is a good part of our process, and we have the non-Arabic. And they don't want to offend anybody, but I think they should offend people. I think the only way you're going to get a good education is to offend in a proper way.
To challenge them.
Yes. I don't think
to direct them, to guide them, and to challenge them. Yes,
but,
I agree.
But make simple rules for them to follow. And I'm not saying this is all Arabic's problem. This is everybody's problem. But they're walking very delicately because of the Arabic problem. Because it's not a problem, but because of the Arabic situation. And I'm not going to be get any merit points for this, but I think we all need a little help in that area.
I often think the schools today are, first of all, I think high schools seem to be very trendy, and that's not necessarily good in terms of basic educational needs. And this has been true for the last 20, 25 years. My daughter went to the Dearborn schools, And she really had very little respect for the teachers, but I think the teachers didn't maybe give enough respect to them. Certainly in this equation, the parents' influence about wanting the children to succeed and also to be good citizens, and I'm talking about Arabic and non-Arabic both here, that has to be an essential component too. And my daughter said, well, I'm not going to study because, I got bad teachers. And I said, and here I am a teacher and so on. And she's become a teacher. She learned this later after she was out of high school, is that you get educated because it matters to you.
Yeah.
In spite of the teacher, in spite of the books or the curriculum, you just take it as far as you can and don't let anybody hold you back, including in school. But education does take discipline. It takes time. It takes focus. And maybe it's a question of teaching them how to study or why they should be motivated more. And I do think that our teachers are doing the best job they can. There's a lot of federal regulations that hamstring them, the No Child Left Behind. According to my daughter, Southfield Public Schools, where she just unbelievably messed up her whole curriculum at trying to inspire and enthuse the students. Mm-hmm. They basically teach to the tests. They have to.
I know their intentions are good, but they follow through. But you know, in my day, the teacher was always right. Today, the teacher is never right. Something goes wrong with a student, the parents want to sue the teacher or want to sue the school system. We never thought of that. You mean we were there to be educated, not to be see how much money we can get out of the school system for picking on my little Johnny or Susie or whoever it is.
And the teachers have to tread very lightly about all these social political issues, much more so than before. And the sensitivity is good, but if it holds back education, it has to be questioned.
It is holding back education. We're rapidly sinking throughout the world as far as education is concerned. We have fewer scientists, fewer engineers, fewer everything.
Here's something I was aware of, just mentioned it briefly. The Dearborn schools, they don't have as many, and they don't do as much educational counseling and guidance as in my day. Mm. In my day, the counselor, I saw him once a week for an hour. I mean, what career do you want to, from the seventh grade on, career, aptitude test, skill test. My daughter got no counseling at all. Accidentally, she got put in what's referred to as the dummy track. She could read. I mean, two college-educated parents. She could read early. She was really smart. And it was, thank goodness, there was a teacher in the 11th grade that said, you're missing out on all these great classes. And it was that one, I think it was a math teacher, a science teacher, that inspired her. And she's in science now. And she's got that inspiration now, thank goodness. But the counselors, and I didn't, you know, even as a parent, so-called knowledgeable parent, I wasn't aware that this was going on, that she didn't have all the opportunities and wasn't getting all of the challenges that she could have, even because they didn't. I said, where are the counselors? Well, we don't have any counselors, or they don't do any counseling. I guess it's only like crisis counseling they do.
In my day, we didn't have counselors.
We
had to make it on our own. You got time for a little humor?
Yes, absolutely.
A little humor story?
Yes, we have at least 6 or 7 minutes here, Frank.
I didn't finish college. But I had a strong desire to. This goes back maybe 15, 20 years. Mm. I had a strong desire to finish college. So I called a professor at University of Michigan, one of the counselors. We had lunch a couple of times. We talked. And he said, Frank, he said, you don't want to finish college. You want to lecture. You should be out lecturing. He said, I'm going to set you up where you can lecture a class and see what you think of this. So I thought about this for a while, and I said, okay, go ahead, sit down, do it, do your thing. So he set me up with the class. He gave me a date and a time and a room and all this kind of stuff. I spent 2 weeks doing nothing but getting ready for this thing. I mean, I'd never lectured before. I didn't even know how to lecture. So, you know, I just played it by ear. Anyhow, I got to the lecture at the proper time, and I got to the room. The room was empty. And I said, well, I was early, so I waited, and the time came, and there was nobody there. And I waited, and I waited, and still nobody showed up. After about 45 minutes, still nobody showed up. So I called it quits, called it a day, and just went home. And I found out later he forgot to post it.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was the end of my lecturing career.
But now you do it in your editorial columns in the Press and Guide.
Yes. But that's a little easier that way because you're not in front of an audience and you're not in front of a live audience anyhow. And a live audience can embarrass you.
I'm sure it saves me every Friday, you know. Sometimes I see the phone lighting up here, but I can't take a phone call while I'm busy talking, unless I know it's somebody that I wanted to interview or whatever. Radio is a nice medium for, you know, it's one way communication, but we hope to challenge people. We never want people to believe as we say, just probably even newspapers. We want you to get as much information as you can from as many sources and make your own decisions. And there are a lot of important decisions that need to be made here. What do you think of our one of the issues you've talked about frequently is our legislature and the whole political mess we've had this year into trying to straighten out the budget crisis, which is a difficult thing to solve. But even now, today, they still don't know. Okay, tell us.
It's not difficult to solve. They're more interested in their own party's thoughts than they are the citizens' thoughts. And I think they should all be fired. and put in, just grab a handful of citizens and put them together. No party affiliations, but just put them together and find out what's wrong. I think the legislator should be a part-time job, not a full-time. But they sit there full-time and dream up ways to spend money. And they've got to do this in order to keep you happy, keep the voter happy. Before I forget, I want to mention that if you want to see what Jay Cornick looks like, I'm going to have him on television. It'll be next month.
Right.
And it'll be announced. The date and time will be announced in the Dearborn Times Herald.
Yes, we're taping the show next week, Thursday, and you can ask me all the tough questions you want to. I'll be ready for nothing.
That's going to be my turn now.
Yeah, I'm worried here. That's why I've got to tread lightly today. Let him tell any jokes that he wants to. Well, it's interesting. You know, a fine columnist, although he probably charged a lot of money, an editorial opinion person that's in the Press and Guide, Tim Skupik, you know, the distinguished host of Off the Record.
He's not in the Press and Guide. He was in Lansing. He's in the Lansing Bureau. He doesn't work for the President.
No, not directly, but I'm saying they have his little editorial comment almost every week. They buy his column, right. And he's totally in favor of the term limits being done away with so that you can just vote these guys out, but also so that you can how do you feel about term limits? One approach is get rid of them. I mean, Mayor Guido always said, and anybody, if you don't want someone in office, don't vote for him. Vote for the other person, but because of the realities as such, that doesn't happen. But on the other hand, even Gary Warrenchuk, after 6 years, when I interviewed him here at the end of his time in Lansing, he said, I'm just starting to learn how to do it. And he's a smart guy, you know, and he's just starting to learn how you get bills passed and how you keep them from being passed. And that was after 6 years he said that.
Well, I was all for term limits when I first was introduced, and I supported it every way I could. But now that I see him in action, I don't like him. I'd like to do away with them.
Yeah.
And I will sign anybody's petition that cares to do it, and I'll promote anything that anybody wants to do along those lines to have it, to do away with term limits and put them in a part-time legislator.
Tim Skupik, in his editorial or little column that was run in the Press Guide last week, actually said he thinks it's dead, that the legislators there right now will not do anything about term limits, not even just extending the term term limits. And he said maybe it'll be 2010 or 2011, but, you know, isn't there somebody around, some organization that can start a petition drive about this?
Any individual can.
Yeah, even just to honor Mayor Guido, forget about the name on the theater, although that was a wonderful thing, and he had his name on the theater and so on, and he did a lot of great things for Dearborn. But to honor him, let's get the term limits removed, just like he wanted. And if we don't like people, we vote them out. But give the few that want to make a career out of it as a responsible public servant, let them be able to stay once they figure out how to do it. Either that, or I'm thinking, let's set up a college to train them how to be legislators, and then only those who graduate can be on the ballot, you know.
We just finished saying school is not worth it. You can't learn anything at school, though, so they wouldn't learn anything there either.
Well, there you go. It's interesting that the federal government, Washington, D.C., whenever newbies come to the House of Representatives, I'm not sure about the Senate, but House of Representatives, they actually have set up a little academy, well, it's 3 days or something, where all the newbies have to go in and learn how to do it and who to call and Ghostbusters.
Yeah, they don't know where the men's room is.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Or the ladies' room.
3 days to learn how to be a responsible legislator? I don't think so. And it's not a simple process. It's not just to, you know, get the votes and go from committee to the floor, but it's learning the dynamics of the people, too. Who has the power? Things have to change, and I hope someone can champion some of these necessary changes. Part-time legislature, I don't know if you considered it, and I'm not sure even that the state of Kansas still has it, and it's not a very popular idea, but a unicameral legislature. Fewer people, but even representation throughout the areas, and only one house that they theoretically could debate and pass bills faster. I don't know. I mean, I know it's not the American tradition. We always have bicameral. We have the House and the Senate, and they fight with each other. But, you know, at least I know Kansas had it, or Nebraska, and they didn't do so badly. They're not. Maybe that's not a big-time deal down there. But
a lot of other states aren't doing so badly. In fact, we're only one of about five or six states that have full-time legislators. And we pay them too much. We pay them about $80,000 a year, plus a staff, plus an office, plus
health
expenses,
insurance.
And insurance for the rest of their life, I think.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I think, you know, that there needs to be some changes, and unfortunately people that are there now as a collective group won't do it. It's Jennifer Granholm's last term as governor, that she's term limited, or that position is term limited, and I think the Republicans spent the whole last 2 years trying to discredit her, therefore the Democratic Party, as not a viable choice for governor. So they're... You know, it's terrible partisan politics.
I've interviewed her 3 times. I like her.
Yeah, well, I do too.
I
never
blame.
Got a chance to interview her. Darn. Maybe when she's out of office, she'll come down here. But, but I've seen her on television actually giving testimony on C-SPAN, the cable channel in Washington D.C. on issues. Very articulate, very dynamic. I think not only is her heart in the right place, but she is smart. I think she's hamstrung on these things. Maybe she's wrong on some of the ways to solve the problems, but we're certainly not getting any collaborative cooperation in Lansing, and that has to be minimized. And I understand that they really only have about 3 days a week that they do any work anyway up there. So
they're only there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Right, yeah, and so I don't say, and unless they have a crisis or something, I'm not sure they're meeting today, Friday,
well,
over
they're,
this.
Well, they're so important that they recess during the crisis. For hunting season.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that's more important than passing tax legislation.
Oh, boy. So I'm glad that there's people like yourself and the Dearborn Times Herald newspaper that can keep our attention on the things that matter the most, especially to us locally. I always say on the show the things that do matter to us most are the local issues, although things like Iraq, health care, okay, they're national, international even, but they also matter to us, too, particularly in Dearborn. And we've got to stay in touch with all that. I thank you for all your work on that. Let me just let you give any final thoughts, and then a plug for Kiwanee Talk, too, not just because I'm going to be on it. But.
Well, yes, I want to thank you first for inviting me on your show and for the coffee you got me. I appreciate that. And the pen you gave me. You know, all these little good things that help you. This is why I come.
Little reminders.
There's a bottle of water here, too. I didn't touch it.
You can take that with you.
No, I'd rather it be vodka.
That's right. That's what he wanted.
That'd be a little bit better. But Kiwanee Talk is a program that's seen every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock and Tuesday, at 7:30. It's on Channel 25 in Dearborn, and I think 25 in Dearborn Heights, but we're seeing it in about 29 different downriver communities and on various channels.
Unfortunately, it's not on WOW in Dearborn. They don't really have any access channels except the CDTV thing from the city. But
up to this point, it's produced by Comcast. Now, starting next month, it will not be. Comcast will not have a part of it. They will still show the shows. And at that point, we will see if WOW will do it, too.
Wow.
Because we'll have to produce our own shows.
Well, any advice or ideas I can give? I teach TV production, too, along with my other hats that I wear here. So,
well, keep listening to the station and keep reading our newspaper.
That's the spirit, folks. Keep making those waves with the Times Herald and also here at WHFR. And let's not forget the Press and Guide. I have not officially offered the invitation.
I did.
To, right.
I forgot them.
Oh, dear. Okay. But I just wanted to say for balance and fairness, I will be inviting Denise McDonald or anyone who wants to speak for the management at Press and Guide to be on this show, too, in the near future at their convenience, of course. So, Frank Bewick, it's been an honor having you in today. Keep up the great work, you and your family at the Dearborn.